Before we get into today's show, I have an urgent challenge to share with you. This podcast is brought to you by the Ministry of Premier Insight. And on June 30th, we come to the end of our financial year. The challenge we face is there is a final funding gap of $65,000 that must be closed by that date. The great news is a generous friend of the ministry has offered to match the first $10,000 given to help meet this goal. But we must fully meet the $10,000 for it to be released. That's why I wanted to take just a moment before we get into today's podcast to ask for your help. If you would, please take a moment today to give your best gift at premierinsight.org/give. That's premierinsight.org/give. Thank you for understanding how important your gift is today and for giving generously. And now it's time for today's podcast.
Well, good afternoon and welcome along to Unbelievable. I'm Justin Briley, your host for the next hour and a half or so for the show that aims to get you thinking and brings different points of view together every week. We call them conversations that matter, and if you want to find lots more of them, do go online to our website. You can download the podcast, you can find lots more features and interesting videos and articles, and of course this year's DVD of Unbelievable the Conference. All of that available from the webpage premierchristianradio.com/Unbelievable. And whether you're listening this Saturday afternoon as part of Faith Explored here on Premier Christian Radio or somewhere around the world to our podcast, it's wonderful to have you with me today. A very important and a timely issue being debated today: should Christians vote for Donald Trump? With the US election just a few weeks away, we're finally doing that particular topic. I'll be introducing my guests in a moment's time. Can I say, though, that if you're interested in this and want to read more about it, well, why not get hold of our brand new November edition of Premier Christianity magazine? I'm the senior editor here in the UK, and we've got on the front Trump card. How will evangelicals play their cards in the US election that's turning politics upside down? And do take a look at the cover. Our designer Malky has done a wonderful job on it. It's just the most clever cover you've ever seen. If you want to see that for yourself and perhaps order a free sample copy if you haven't had a chance to read the magazine before, premierchristianity.com/free sample. Also includes our interview with Tony Campolo on the US election, and also for the first time since his announcement last year, he talks about why he's changed his mind on same-sex marriage. So lots of interesting content in the latest edition of the magazine, and we'll be hearing from Tony Campolo later on in today's show. I'll be explaining all that in a moment's time. And don't forget about our special event coming up on Monday, the 14th of November. Can we agree to disagree? Christians and human in dialogue. I'll be part of a panel of Christians and atheists talking about that question, chaired by BBC broadcaster Nick Ross. It's happening at Conway Hall in London, being put on by Premier Christian Radio and the British Humanist Association. If you want to find tickets and get yourself along there, go to the Eventbrite page for the tickets. That's Can We Agree to Disagree? Christians and Humanists in Dialogue on Monday, the 14th of November. And we'll be recording that for broadcast here as an episode of Unbelievable. Right now, time to get into today's show. You're unbelievable. Well, today on the programme, we're asking, should Christians vote for Donald Trump? Yes, we don't often do politics here on Unbelievable, but we thought we'd make an exception in the case of this possibly most divisive and bizarre US presidential election in USA history. The white evangelical vote in the USA has, of course, traditionally sided with the Republican candidate. But this year, Donald Trump's campaign has divided not only his own party, but evangelical Christians too. His brand of brash politics, rhetoric against immigrants, and propensity for insults, plus, of course, recent revelations about sexually demeaning language and behaviour, have led to many evangelicals saying Christians should #NeverTrump, while others have endorsed him, even while holding their noses, believing that even at his worst, he's a better option for America than Hillary Clinton. Well, Hillary herself, his Democrat opponent, is of course the favourite to win at the time of recording, but isn't necessarily well liked by many in her own party. Many evangelicals, of course, see her as a non-option because of her liberal views on abortion, sexuality, religious liberty, and so on. And of course, that email scandal, which has dogged her reputation at large. Well, these are what we know at the point of recording today's discussion, but with so many twists and turns already in this election, who knows what may have happened by the time you hear today's show. Nonetheless, we're going to be doing the best with what we do know at this point today. As joining me in studio is Christina Rees. Christina is an American living in the UK. She has dual nationality. Former chair of WATCH, which stands for Women and the Church, a campaigning for equality for women in church leadership. She says, no, Christians should not vote for Trump, and recently wrote a blog to that end for Premier Christianity magazine on why she thinks evangelicals should retract their endorsements, especially after Trump's recent hot mic recordings, which he described what many would see as sexual assault on women. On the line is John Smirak, senior editor at stream.org and author of The Politically Incorrect Guide to Catholicism. He's backing Trump and says so should Christians who value liberty, family and society. And also this afternoon we're going to hear from Eric Metaxas, who again at the time of recording has endorsed Trump as the lesser of two evils. I interviewed the influential evangelical at his radio show in New York recently. And we'll also hear from significant Christian leader Tony Campolo, who's very critical of Trump and supports Hillary Clinton's bid for the presidency. And you'll be able to read those interviews with both Campolo and Metaxas in recent editions of Premier Christianity magazine. I'm the senior editor there. You can also read in our November edition an article by Sky Jatani, a US pastor and contributor on this most divisive of elections in the USA. It's our front cover story for the November edition, available at premierchristianity.com. So a long intro today, but this is a complex subject, and it's my pleasure to welcome, as I say, into studio Christina Rees and on the line John Smirak. So Christina, just a warm welcome to you first of all. Tell us a little bit about yourself. You contributed a long time ago to an edition of Unbelievable on the issue of women in leadership, and that's something that's been close to your heart over many years, hasn't
it? That's right, Justin. It's good to be back. Yes, I have been speaking out for Christian women to share leadership with men, be allowed to share leadership with men, as I believe both women and men are made equally in the image of God. Many other reasons. I think now secular statistics are showing that when boardrooms have both women and men in there together, in literally 50%, you know, half women, half men, that not only do they perform better and get on better, more effective, but if it's a profit-making business, the results are there for everyone to see.
Well, that's not precisely what you're here to talk about today, of course. I'd just be interested, do you get a vote as someone with dual nationality but living here in the UK as to who becomes your next president?
I do, absolutely, in theory. I think certain things I've allowed to lapse, and so I have to scrabble around and see if I can make that happen before the day.
Yes. I don't know where you've stood traditionally politically, but it's true to say in general, I think, that white evangelicals, the vote tends to be for the Republican candidate. Have you ever quite witnessed an election like this, though, in the history of the USA?
I've never seen anything like this. And I remember when I was over in the States visiting friends and family, and I saw something about Donald Trump running for presidency, I thought it was part of a satirical magazine. And then a few months later, I realized it was true.
Well, I think no one really took it terribly seriously when he first announced it. And then gradually, as the primaries came in and so on, suddenly people were thinking, crumbs, well, this looks like it's going to happen.
This looks serious. I mean, he is an entrepreneur. He is a very successful businessman and an entertainer. Michael Moore, the independent filmmaker, has a theory that Trump did it just basically to get up the noses of his bosses, right, for his show, right, and get them to pay him more.
Right.
And then all of a sudden,
it took off.
It took off, and he suddenly got the taste for being a politician.
Right. Well, it's good to have you on the program today. As I say, we don't often do politics on Unbelievable, but this has obviously just dominated so much of what everyone's been talking about. It felt like we should do it, and particularly talk about the Christian angle on it. And so we're going to be doing that today. My other guest is, of course, John Smirak, a senior editor at stream.org, author of The Politically Incorrect Guide to Catholicism. John, welcome along to the program today.
Thank you.
It's great to have you on. Just from the title of your book, John, can I surmise that you are yourself a Catholic?
Yes.
And why a politically incorrect one, exactly?
Well, because the contemporary culture is in its automatic cultural views and political implications, so implacably hostile to any sort of traditional Orthodox Christian faith that you have to keep swimming upstream and flouting the pieties of the contemporary culture. I'm sure that 100 years ago, the Catholic Church was politically incorrect in a long series of different ways. As Chesterton said, the church is the same in every century, so it's equally unfashionable for opposite reasons, depending on the century.
Where does the Catholic vote in the USA usually lie when it comes to presidential elections?
It's a mixed bag. I think the Catholic vote in America is a bit more like... You see, in America, the evangelical vote is solidly religiously conservative. Mm. I think in America, it's a bit more like Christians in Britain, where it's split. Mm. Whereas the evangelicals have, I think, admirably unified, largely until this election, on moral and religious liberty issues. I think the Catholic vote in America has been somewhat split, with a lot of people voting their perceived economic interests, and a lot of our bishops seeming to line up with the government, in part because they derive fiscal benefits from large government programs. And also, the American Catholic Church would be shrinking if it were not for a generous influx of immigrants from Central America,
right,
Latin America, and I think the American bishops rely on that.
Okay, so obviously it's a complex picture on the Catholic front. I mean, we'll come to this, I'm sure, to hear exactly why you feel that you couldn't vote for the Democrat side. But just the other thing I wanted to ask you about, stream.org, just what sort of a publication is it? Why should people read your articles there?
It's a really good ecumenical website founded by evangelical Christian pastor James Robison, who has a TV show and ministry in Africa that drills wells and preaches the gospel around the world. I'm one of a long list of writers. It's probably majority evangelical writers. And it's dedicated to the vision of intellectual, spiritual, economic freedom that you would trace back to the Anglo-American political tradition. And so the human person in its dignity deserves freedom, and that's the message that made the West great.
Okay. Well, look, we're going to get into today's discussion. Great to have you with us on the line. John, thank you for joining me in studio. Christina, if you are listening and you'd like to have your say, and there are many listeners, of course, to Unbelievable across the pond in the USA, tell us what you think. Do you feel obliged to vote Republican, whoever the person on the ticket is? Or will you be abstaining this year? Will you be voting Hillary? Be interested to hear from you and why. Do email in unbelievable@premier.org.uk. You can also, of course, leave comments underneath today's show. That's at premierchristianradio.com/unbelievable. And find links there too, also to Christina Rees and John Smirak, my guests on the programme today. You can find us also on social media at UnbelievableJB for the Twitter account, facebook.com/unbelievableJB to follow the show on Facebook.
Unbelievable with Justin Brierley.
Well, let's get into the substance of this discussion. And in a moment's time, I'm going to play out a little of what Eric Metaxas had to say when I spoke to him in New York earlier in the summer, and see why he has decided, at the point of recording, to endorse Donald Trump. Just coming back to you, Christina, first of all, I mean, generally, I'm guessing you're more of a Democrat than a Republican overall. Is that kind of fair to say, if you're willing to kind of put your political cards on the table there?
Definitely now, that's where I stand. But both my parents were Republicans, and certainly a lot of what I grew up with was more the Republican ethos of small government and people being very independent, putting a lot of weight on people living their own lives and the way they want to, and not having government getting involved in everything. So I think that that's where I started. But I have moved and moved for a variety of reasons. It's impossible to tell how much living in the UK has done that, but particularly experiences of working with a large Christian voluntary organization called the Children's Society in the UK that works with people who've fallen through all the nets that society provides. And so even all the welfare systems and the social benefits, we're talking about people who can't even deal with those. And a growing awareness that there are people who simply cannot pull themselves up with their own bootstraps because, first of all, they don't have boots. And how, of course, the last thing I would want is a nanny state and overweening government, but an awareness that in society there are the weak and the poor and those who are alienated and for whatever reason cannot get on in society.
And for you, the Democrat Party tends to be the party that sees that as a primary issue.
Sees that more. But as I say, I've lived here quite some time. But that's certainly where I would land, probably, if I were to go back to the
States. Now, you wrote this article for our website on Trump, specifically after these revelations came out about these comments he made on this hot mic and so on that were demeaning of women and some have interpreted as being sort of almost sexual abuse of sort. I mean, is it what's the primary thing that you dislike most about Donald Trump? Is it his character, the things he says, or is it his policies? Is it a combination of...
Well, let's just step back for a moment and look at the character of the man. If he were already president and then we found out he'd said those things, that would probably be a resigning issue. He certainly wouldn't get re-elected. Over here in the UK, if our prime minister were found to have said those things, and it's not just the words, because he was describing things that he has done to women, things he likes to do to women that are absolutely classified as sexual assault. He demeans not only half the human race, but I think it's a theological issue. I mean, he's demeaning members of the body of Christ. He's demeaning the image of God or almost denying it in half the human race. This is the character of a man who I would say, you know, he's the Brighton Rock of nastiness. I would not want this man taking decisions. I do not trust his ethics and his morality. And while we know that a lot of politicians have foibles, have made mistakes, and we're all human, aren't we? That's less of a thing. It's the way his whole approach to women. Mm. And I really think what we have with Trump is someone who is so locked into a way of looking at women and also foreigners and others that almost declassifies them as fellow human beings made in the image of God and really puts them on the level of lesser beings. It's a very disturbing picture.
Before you even get to his policies, it's his attitude towards women and others that is your primary...
His attitude to women and other people. It's his character.
Okay.
It's his character that I could not imagine having a man like that as the president of the United States.
Now, as I say, at the time of recording, there were even talks of other possible things being leaked. Who knows what may have occurred in between now and when this programme is broadcast. But in any case, we're going with what we know now. John Smirak, I asked you to come on the show shortly before those hot mic recordings were released. Has your opinion on Trump changed at all in the interim, would you say, John?
No, not really. I was never enthusiastic about him as the Republican candidate.
Okay.
I supported Ted Cruz, but as an alternative to Hillary Clinton, as I've said before, I would vote for a dead moose strapped to the hood of a car in order to stop Hillary Clinton or really any of the Democrats in America, because their policies are fundamentally incompatible with Christianity and really just with human decency. I wrote an article where I said that this election, it's a great deal like the attitude Christians had to take towards the Emperor Constantine. No, he wasn't perfect. No, he did not advocate an ideal Christian society. He kept slavery in place. He allowed the exposure of incense. There were a lot of bad things about Constantine, but he stopped persecuting the church. And the Christian church was willing to accept that protection as better than the alternative. Mm-hmm. We had a president recently who treated women the way Donald Trump talks about treating them. His name was Bill Clinton. And Hillary Clinton was involved in targeting, destroying, intentionally humiliating the women whom she knew her husband had done these things to. So I spare me the shock and surprise that an American politician can be disgusting. I've known that for a while. Well, when you talk about dehumanizing people, keep in mind Hillary Clinton is the candidate endorsed by the organization Planned Parenthood, which takes part in the destruction of 1 million unborn children in America every year, and we learned last year uses their body parts, their organs, and sells them for profit. And Hillary Clinton appears on the stage next to the chairman of Planned Parenthood, and she promises to increase government funding to Planned Parenthood. That, to me, is significantly worse than vile, despicable locker room talk.
Okay, let me put this to you then, John. Obviously, you're more anti-Hillary than you are pro-Trump in that sense, but there are Christians who similarly don't feel they can bring themselves to vote for Hillary, but are saying, I simply won't vote. Nothing could induce me to actually put my mark against Trump's name, however much I don't particularly want to see Hillary win either. So what do you take to that kind of approach?
I think it's kind of a reckless pacifism. It's sort of like saying in World War II, well, oh yeah, Hitler's horrible, but so is Stalin, so I'm not going to fight. I'm not going to get involved. We should be neutral. We should be like Switzerland. I'm just rereading Evelyn Waugh's Sword of Honor trilogy, and his hero takes that attitude at the outset of the novel, but he's wrong. We are in the world. We are incarnate. We're not spirits floating in the ether. We are in a real-life situation where we have to choose between two alternatives, one of which is worse for innocent, vulnerable people like unborn children. Okay. Even if it's distasteful to us because the party chose sort of a clown as its nominee.
Okay, all right. Let's Christine, do you want to respond to any of this? I mean, obviously, this is the key reason why many evangelicals will vote for Trump, is because they don't like the policies that Hillary supports in terms of being pro-choice, in terms of those kinds of reproductive issues. And she's obviously, there's also this thing John says about, you know, her husband has a lot to answer for when it comes to the treatment of women, and she has apparently supported him through that. So, yeah, what would you say in response?
I think there's a lot I'd like to say to what John has just said. And the first thing is, of course, is that Bill Clinton is not standing for president again. And I am not standing up for Bill Clinton at all. It's Hillary. And the other thing that I would have to say, John, I find your saying that you'd rather vote for a dead animal than for a living person, beloved of Christ, quite offensive. And she's actually your sister in Christ. So that's pretty offensive, that dead moose comment. The other thing, you say you're against abortion. Well, I think everybody is against abortion we should do this, but it's the lesser of many evils. I would also probably guess that you're against birth control.
Can I chime in here?
Okay, yes.
I in no way think that the government should interfere with birth control. I can't imagine what evil abortion is less than. What could be worse than killing unborn children for your own sexual convenience to enable a culture of sexual hedonism?
I would have to get right in there and say that in many cases it is not for your own sexual convenience. For many cases, it the mother might die, the fetus is not viable. There are many, many instances. Even Trump says there are instances where he is pro-abortion, where it would, for medical reasons and things like that. The other thing I would take issue with, and I think this is astounding that you should claim this, is that the Democrats' policies are anti-Christian. I think they're much more Christian, the Christianity I see, preached in the New Testament, in the Gospels. And the thing about the Republicans, I think the thing that appeals to me about the Republicanism, and I hinted at this earlier, the independence, is that independence gives incentives to people. It works with that part of human nature that wants a challenge and wants to try for itself. But the thing is that the Democrats are there where they are picking up the pieces of people who are not making it. There is the compassion. There is the care. There is the caring for your neighbor. Remember what Jesus said is, you know, what do we have to do is love God with all your heart and soul and mind and strength and love your neighbor as yourself. To me, that sounds like a lot of more of the Democratic policies than the Republicans.
Well, look.
Okay, I have to jump in.
Okay,
here,
jump in, and then we need to hear from Eric Metaxas. But go ahead.
Absolutely, categorically wrong. What the Democratic Party does is replace charity, replace care for your neighbor. It organizes it, it coerces it, and it puts it through the state. Jesus did not go to the rich young man, tell him, sell all you have and give it to the poor, when the rich young man wouldn't do it. Jesus didn't have the disciples take his wealth and distribute it among the poor in order to buy the votes of the poor so he could come to power in Jerusalem. That is the program of the Democrats. They are like the zealots whom Jesus rebuked and turned away from. Jesus asks us out of the goodness of our heart to help our neighbor, not to coerce other people to help our neighbor on our behalf.
Yeah, that's the ideal. That's the standard for all Christians to help that. I have to say, though, that analogy of what Jesus asked his disciples do and the coercion of the Democrat, it just absolutely bonkers, because in his day, you know, what did he do? He walked by and healed lepers and people who were lame and blind on the street. You know, these days, without the type of policies that organized by the state, we'd still have the lepers, the lame, the blind on the side of the street. So thank God for those policies administered through the state.
Well, look, I appreciate you're not going to.
Then we don't need Jesus. That's perfect.
Of course we need
why
Jesus.
The Democrats are persecuting the Christian church in America, and the left
well,
is persecuting
around I've got Christina shaking her head at that comment, but we're going to go to a quick break, I want to move us back to Trump himself as well in terms of the discussion. We're going to hear after a short break from Eric Metaxas, who I interviewed recently in New York, about his endorsement for Donald Trump as against Hillary Clinton. You're listening to Unbelievable, edition of the show today, in which we're asking, should Christians vote for Donald Trump? Well, maybe you don't think it matters much if you're living here in the UK, but it matters to an awful lot of Unbelievable listeners who tune into this show via podcast, and I'd be delighted to hear from you as well. If you want to get in touch, do email in unbelievable@premier.org.uk, and I look forward to hearing from you back in a moment's time. Is Donald the Trump card or the Joker in the pack? In the latest edition of Premier Christianity magazine, we examine the US election that's turning politics upside down and how evangelicals will play their cards. Tony Campolo talks about why he changed his mind on gay marriage. Mike Pilavachi teaches you how to be naturally supernatural and, when the prodigals don't come home, what to do when your kids have walked away from God. All that plus much, much more. Request a free sample copy at premierchristianity.com/freesample.
You're listening to Unbelievable on Premier Christian Radio.
Welcome back to today's programme, Unbelievable, with me, Justin Briley, the show that brings different perspectives together every week here on Premier Christian Radio as part of Faith Explored, usually diving into theological waters or Christian non-Christian debates. But today, doing a political edition of the programme, not something we often do, but, you know, something's been on the agenda for quite a while and in topmost of people's minds, and that is, of course, the US election, Trump versus Hillary. Should Christians vote for Donald Trump is what we're asking today on the show. Look forward to hearing your feedback to this issue today. If you want to get in touch, unbelievable@premier.org.uk. We'll hear some of your feedback to recent shows as well later on in the programme. Don't forget that straight after Unbelievable this Saturday afternoon, you can hear The Profile, in which we'll be hearing from another Christian in some walk of faith or life, their ministry, and hearing what difference Jesus has made in their life. If you want to listen back to today's programme or other editions of Unbelievable, then why not go to our website to do that? premierchristianradio.com/unbelievable. If you're listening by podcast, why not rate the show and let other people know about it too? It'd be great if you could do that for us. Okay, so today on the programme, as we talk about this most divisive of US elections, Christina Reese joins me in studio. Christina, an American living here in the UK, former chair of Watch, Women and the Church, and she says no, Christians should not vote for Trump. She recently wrote a blog for Premier Christianity magazine along those lines. My other guest on the line from the States is John Smirak. He's a senior editor at Stream.org and author of The Politically Incorrect Guide to Catholicism. Well, before we go back to my guests and continue to talk about this this issue of whether evangelical Christians should or shouldn't be voting for Trump, let's hear from someone who has endorsed Donald Trump, a fairly senior and influential evangelical out in the States. He's an author and radio host, Eric Metaxas. Here he was with me making the case for voting for Trump against Hillary.
It sounds a little bit like you're saying it's the lesser of two evils almost.
Mm. I'll say that. Yeah. It is the lesser of two evils. Donald Trump is no George Washington. Mm-hmm. And I could speak for at least an hour on telling you what I think is not good about him. But I could speak for an hour and 20 minutes about Hillary Clinton. And I think that is dispositive.
I mean, we hear much less in the sense over in the UK about Hillary Clinton. Well, because Trump is such a almost pantomime character sometimes.
That's only half of it. The press in the US has always been very, very liberal. And so whatever Trump says will be magnified. As bad as it is, it will be magnified and interpreted in a certain way. And Hillary Clinton, she has done things that I am staggered that the press has not thrown her out. I mean, she is – the level of corruption and cynicism is staggering to me. It's staggering. It makes Nixon look like a Boy Scout, and yet they just give it a pass. And by giving it a pass, they make her seem, you know, mainstream and so on and so forth. But I don't think she is.
I mean, there have been other significant evangelicals most recently. I think Wayne Grudem made the case, the moral case for voting for Donald Trump.
Wonderful article.
And got a lot of flack for it from some quarters. There are some people, you know, the Never Trump camp who say, however much you dislike Hillary, you should not be voting for someone who is as morally questionable in other ways as Donald Trump.
No, that's his being questioned. His morality doesn't come into governance in the way that hers does. In other words, it's not about private morality.
Well, I think they would also be pointing at some of his policies, and obviously maybe he's backtracking a little bit on some of this stuff now, but the whole banning Muslims from entering the U.S. And
yeah, I mean, a lot of that. What fascinates me is how everybody takes him literally, and they don't seem to understand that he has always spoken hyperbolically and impressionistically. Mm-hmm. That's what he does. Now, people can pretend he doesn't, but he does. And so if you want to criticize him for that, go ahead. But he does not – I mean, the idea that he's a racist or a xenophobe, I think that that's simply not true. But if you say something enough, people believe it. It has been said innumerable times, so that now it's taken as a matter of faith.
But there do seem to be Christians out there who are saying you just either shouldn't vote or you
many
should
of them
go
are,
for a,
many
a
of them
third
are dear,
party.
Many of them are very dear friends of mine. And I have to say I don't agree. I think that – Let me put it this way. If this were another era, if this were 1980, that's an option. Okay. You cannot vote or you can vote for a third party candidate. We are at a very dangerous place in our politics. And I think that another 4 years or 8 years of Obama, which is effectively what you get with Hillary, it should scare Americans. They should understand that this is not – there's no such thing as not voting. I'm either – voting for this or I'm voting for this. If I allow Hillary Clinton to get into office, I have to accept that I will lose my religious liberties and America will become a different place. That wasn't possible 10, 20, 30 years ago, but we've moved things along so that these things will happen and people of faith will be demonized. We're already being demonized, but it's going to get much stronger if we're allowed, if we allow somebody like Hillary Clinton to get in, because she'll nominate people to the Supreme Court who have the view of Sotomayor or whatever. People don't seem to understand that that's very bad for liberty. And when I say liberty, I mean all liberty. I don't mean religious liberty. I mean liberty in the American mold of liberty.
Yeah. And so better the devil you know, in the sense that you, there's a chance at least that Donald Trump is going to stand up for those kinds of
The way I see
liberties.
It's Donald Trump, when people say there's a chance, it's kind of like a guy who's like shooting bullets in the air and you say, don't do that. It could hit somebody, right? That's what I see Donald Trump as doing.
Yeah.
As opposed to somebody holding a gun and training it at somebody and saying, I want to hit that. In other words, Hillary Clinton knows what she wants to do. And I'm very scared of what she wants to do. And I know what she wants to do and she will do it. Trump, I would say he says things he shouldn't say. He says things that embarrass people, that make them angry, whatever. But I don't think those things can be compared to what we know Hillary will do. And listen, unfortunately, we will get to see. Yeah. I mean, whoever gets elected, we will see what happens.
There you go. Some of my conversation with Eric Metaxas back in the summer. Now, as I say, this was obviously all recorded before recent revelations about Donald Trump's comments about women and sexual impropriety and so on. But first of all, Christine, what was your reaction to some of what Eric Metaxas has to say in terms of his defense of Donald Trump?
Well, several things. When he said that under Clinton we'd lose our religious liberties, well, certainly under Trump, all Muslims would immediately lose their religious liberties. And Clinton is known, Hillary Clinton is known to be a Christian, a Methodist, who's gone on record as saying, you know, that she understands and knows that the Bible is the living word. When Trump has spoken about his faith, it's wishy-washy and mealy-mouth doesn't come into it. There's, you know, he says he just sort of makes these grandiose statements about, oh, I think religion is wonderful. No, he doesn't. He had nothing to say about Jesus Christ, nothing to say about the Christian God, and just religion is wonderful.
He famously said, I think, when addressing a sort of Christian convention and was asked, do you ever ask for forgiveness? Mm-hmm. He said, no, I don't think I've got anything to be sorry for.
I cannot see where his faith is. I trust in Hillary's faith, and if Eric is worried about family values and John earlier, well, here we're looking at a man who's been divorced several times, married three times, and Hillary Clinton has done the one thing that people are enjoined to do, which is stay married to their partner, not necessarily even when they've been unfaithful, but at huge personal cost to herself. She stayed faithful to Bill Clinton through that horrendously embarrassing time.
You were rolling your eyes as well, and we will come to John in a moment's time. We will come to you, John. When Eric described we should kind of take Trump with a pinch of salt. He tends to exaggerate, speaks hyperbolically. You don't buy that.
I don't buy that at all. This is the man who's going to be in the White House running the most powerful country in the world. And he, if that's the way he speaks, then we're in great danger, because I really don't think that in matters of foreign policy and many other things that he can get away with that sort of grandiose scattergun way of speaking at all.
John, your reaction to what Eric had to say?
Sure. Eric is always sensible and always a lot of fun. Hillary Clinton has said that Christians will have to be forced to change their beliefs about abortion in order to give women their fundamental human rights. She said that before the United Nations. She has said that Christians in America should accept the freedom of worship standard that the Organization of the Islamic Conference promotes. And she doesn't talk about our free exercise of religion, which is ours under our Constitution. That's a much narrower definition of religious liberty. Donald Trump has not called for restricting religious liberty of any Muslims currently legally in the United States. He has, I think, quite sensibly, given the catastrophe we've seen all across Europe, said that people who want to come into the United States who don't respect our separation of church and state, who don't respect religious freedom, who don't respect women, should not be permitted, and that people who agree to the political theology that is Sharia should not be admitted into America. We have the right to admit or not admit anyone we want. No one outside the country has a right to emigrate to the United States. And I think the citizens of Germany are learning the price of this kind of namby-pamby equating all religions with each other. Religions are not all the same. Christianity and Islam are not interchangeable, as Christians knew for a good 1,000 years of resisting Islamic oppression. And my friends who are Assyrian Christians, refugees from ISIS, will tell you all about the difference between Islam and Christianity.
Christina also raises the fact, though, that, as far as she's concerned, if you're looking for a Christian candidate, well, look to Hillary Clinton. Trump just... And I think it's been painful, if I'm honest, for lots of evangelicals who have supported him. He just seems to be fumbling his way around when it comes to that stuff. I mean, would you agree with that, John?
I think Hillary has mastered the language of religious hypocrisy, that she is very good at using the rhetoric of the social gospel to smear together the legitimate aspirations we might have as Christians to try to help people in society with a utopian socialist political agenda that wants to use the government to make the church and private charity unnecessary.
Do you want to come back, Christina?
First of all, just on the last thing you said, John, I think the church and private charity will always be necessary, because no government system, however well organized and efficiently run, can ever do what our churches do day in, day out. And we all know what private charity translates into is knowing who our neighbors are, caring for them, and being there for them. So first of all, I really cannot imagine that that's her goal. I think what she wants to do is get a system that is sustainable and that helps those who cannot help themselves. So to lift everyone up, which to me is a very Christian aim, I do not think she wants to do away with the type of activities that go on every week in, week out, day in, day out, with Christian churches and with neighborliness and caring for other people. So I don't accept that her goal is utopian. I think it's practical and realistic, and I think it's based on very sound Christian principles.
What about this contention John has that she wants to effectively limit religious liberties by telling Christians what they can and can't believe about abortion or about sexuality? I've heard the same from Eric. You know, he said exactly the same, that he thinks she has gone on record as saying, you will have to change your mind if you're a Christian on this issue.
Well, I have not heard that, and I have not read the transcripts of anything she said, so I don't really know about that. If she's trying to limit Christian freedom of thought, of course that's not right, any more than Trump trying to do it. I don't know about that.
Well, look, let's hear from another Hillary supporter, Tony Campolo, who joined Sam Hales recently in our London studio while he was coming over to the UK. Tony Campolo has been an influential Christian leader both in the UK and in the USA. He's recently retired from full-time Christian ministry, though you wouldn't know it. He's still a very significant voice in Christian circles. And here's what he had to say on the whole issue of Trump and the support by evangelicals in particular of Trump and also of Hillary.
I just wonder, did you ever think you'd see a day where Donald Trump would be this close to becoming president?
No, I did not. I remember my reaction when he announced. I couldn't believe that he was even going to try. Mm. And then he kept on winning primary election in one state, then in another state. And he would say these outrageous things. And people would say, we like that. Mm. And I guess the thing that bothers me most is that evangelicals liked his racist statements, his homophobic statements, his anti-feminist statements, his his belligerency. I mean, they loved it. And I'm just saying, I actually wrote an article that on our website, redletterchristians.org, on what's most disturbing is not who Donald Trump is, but what this is revealing about the consciousness of evangelicals.
Yeah, because I think it is a big puzzle, certainly for a lot of British evangelicals. Why are we seeing these major U.S. evangelical leaders endorsing Trump?
Because to a large degree, their Christianity is more influenced by politics rather than they influencing politics.
Right.
Their commitment, for instance, to the Republican Party mm-hmm. is unquestioned. I mean, we started this movement called the Red Letter Christians Movement. You can go to the website, redletterchristians.org, and check it out. Primarily because we feel uncomfortable calling ourselves evangelicals anymore, because the general public assumes certain things about us that we say isn't true. We are not for capital punishment. We are not pro-war. We don't hate gays. Mm-hmm. We are not anti-feminist. We are not opposed to Hispanic people coming mm-hmm. into our country. Mm-hmm. This is not who we are. And the idea that we should be identified with that kind of ideology yeah. is something that we reject. So we had to start this new movement, and we're calling ourselves Red Letter Christians now, referring to the red letters in the Bible, you know, mm. that highlight the words of Jesus.
Yeah.
I think the church has done a good job over the years in embracing the theology of Paul.
Mm-hmm.
And we really have developed a brilliant theology of Pauline's writings.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't done a very serious job of taking Jesus seriously.
And so we clearly need an alternative to Donald Trump, but issue the alternative. That's
there's
the
an organization in Princeton, New Jersey that checks the facts that people utilize in their speeches.
Mm.
Came out number one, Hillary Clinton, most factual, most honest. Down near the bottom was Donald Trump.
Yeah.
He makes these statements and nobody calls him on it.
Mm.
For instance, I don't know whether this got over here. He talked about on 9/11, thousands of Muslims were dancing in the streets of Jersey City and Newark, New Jersey, dancing, cheering. Never happened.
Mm.
There's not a photograph to back that up.
Mm.
Nobody ever witnessed it. But somehow Hillary's the liar.
Right.
You can go down the list and say, where did she lie?
Mm.
Now, I think that she did not do her best on one of the interviews I saw on Fox News.
Mm-hmm.
But I think she's tried to be honest. But sure. I got to tell you, that sense of I don't trust her.
Mm.
I mean, what happens is that you got a Hitler tactic. You know what Hitler said? If you say something often enough, people will believe it.
Mm.
And so Donald Trump, every speech talks about corrupt, dishonest Hillary.
Right.
She can't utter the name without using those words.
Okay.
And the question is, if this is heard over and over and over again, is this not believed?
Sure.
So out of 30,000 emails, three are considered suspicious
right. And
should not have been put on an email.
Mm.
And they say, well, there was in the content of the letter a little C saying confidential that
right.
suggested confidence. Well, 30,000 and you didn't find a little C in three of them?
There you go. Tony Campolo speaking to Sam Hales from Premier Christianity magazine. Again, both Eric Metaxas and Tony Campolo interviewed in recent editions of the magazine about their support for or against Donald Trump and so on. Tony Campolo in our November edition. And a reminder, if you want to get a free sample copy, you can go to premierchristianity.com/free sample. Again, I should have said this on the back of the Eric Metaxas interview, of course, that at the time we recorded that, Wayne Grudem was endorsing Trump, saying he was the morally the right choice. That, of course, has been retracted on the back of those hot mic comments by Trump. So, John, first of all, response to the way Tony Campolo sees it. What do you make of his views on this?
I think it's interesting that he compares Donald Trump to Adolf Hitler. I'm reminded of the way that British citizens who wanted their sovereignty back were compared to all sorts of rabid extremists before the Brexit vote. And I think there are a lot of parallels between the Brexit vote and the Trump movement. Although I have to say the leaders of Brexit, men like Daniel Hannan, are significantly more principled, intelligent, and thoughtful than anything that Donald Trump has to offer. But I think the movements are parallel, that American Christians of every variety see that secular elites are gaining power and are overriding our constitutional freedoms and are pursuing a secular globalist agenda that is compatible with what George Soros has been promoting, pouring tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars into the coffers of left-wing churches to try to keep abortion legal, to try to dissolve traditional marriage, to try to open borders of Christian countries to mass influx of Sharia adherents, and destroy the state of Israel. Donald Trump is a flawed instrument for a moderate attempt to protect some valuable things that are under savage assault in America, including our rights as Americans, our rights as Christians. And I would point out, Tony Campolo did not mention the thousands of emails that Hillary Clinton deleted, even though they'd been requested by the U.S. Congress. So we'll never know just how crooked Hillary is because she destroyed the evidence.
I mean, is there anything Donald Trump could say that would stop you voting for him? I mean, obviously there was something that he could say that stopped Wayne Grudem giving him his endorsement. You know, he obviously crossed some kind of a line that he felt was too far. Is there anything he could do or say that would stop you voting for him?
Yes. If he said that he was not going to appoint justices to the U.S. Supreme Court who would advance the rights of unborn children and religious liberty.
I guess what I'm saying is
the only reason I'm voting for.
Is there anything scandal, you know, is there any scandal that could be uncovered that would stop you voting for him? Even worse things on tape. Some awful indiscretion.
I don't care about the personal morality of someone in government. I mean, Winston Churchill was an agnostic, hard-drinking racist. He was better than the alternative, and that's what I see right now.
Okay. Christina?
Well, first of all, I think that Trump has already crossed the line, not only for someone like Wayne Grudem, and Wayne Grudem and I disagree on many, many fine theological
points. I can
imagine
you do.
And when I heard that Wayne Grudem has just sort of decided to back off his support of Trump, then you know Trump's bad. And I'm surprised to hear that John, you know, there's nothing moral and ethical about Trump that would make him. You know, we know from these tapes that Trump said in public and was recorded saying the N-word. To me, the leader of the, you know, the biggest country in the Western world, even thinking it, much less saying it, to me crosses that line right there. So
as far as John's concerned, let the man say whatever he wants, act however he wants, as long as he's enacting policy.
As long as he's anti-abortion and pro-religious freedom. And I get that. I mean, those are, you know, and I can understand why those are important things. I happen not to be
prioritize
on the same
those. Yeah.
Well, religious freedom to me is incredibly important. And that's so important. And particularly in America, when you look back to why America and how America came to be founded by the Europeans, we mustn't forget that America was already founded with many, many people living there already. And so, but the European colonization, certainly it was religious freedom and tolerance. I don't even see a bone of tolerance in Donald Trump.
We're going to take another break and we'll be back wrapping up today's program. It's come around fast, hasn't it? But we'll continue this discussion. John Smirak joins us on the line. He's defending the Christian vote for Donald Trump. Against that view is Christina Rees on today's edition of Unbelievable, a political edition of the program for you today. And if you'd like to get in touch, I'll be giving the ways to do that again in a moment's time. Do look forward to hearing from you, and we'll be concluding today's discussion in a moment's time.
In July 2016, Unbelievable the Conference took place in London, a day for any Christian who struggles to share their faith with others.
I'm Justin Brierley, and I hosted a fantastic day of inspirational sessions with J. John, Gary Habermas, Beth Grove, and many others.
Now you've got the chance to watch and listen to over 12 hours of this empowering conference.
Featuring evangelism, apologetics and the resurrection.
Get your DVD at premier.org.uk/shop and become a confident evangelist today.
Welcome back to the final part of Unbelievable this Saturday afternoon. And however you're listening, it's great to have you on board. We'll be hearing the final part of our discussion on whether Christians can or should vote for Donald Trump in a moment's time with my guests. Again, if you want to get hold of the latest edition of Premier Christianity magazine, that's our front cover feature. It features Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton sort of done up as a king and queen of diamonds on a playing card. And you can literally, the magazine is reversible. You can look at it either way. And our headline is Trump Card: How Will Evangelicals Play Their Hand in the US Election That's Turning Politics Upside Down? If you want a free sample copy and see what Sky Jatani, who's written our main feature, says about the whole US election from a Christian perspective, then do go to premierchristianity.com/free sample. Also includes our interview with Tony Campolo, which you heard part of in today's program. You can read that in full, including exclusively he's talking to us about why he changed his mind on same-sex marriage. So if you want to see that, go to the website premierchristianity.com. we'll be putting it up there as well, but you can also get the magazine. I do encourage you to do that if you've never asked for it before. Free sample copy straight to your door, premierchristianity.com/free sample. We'd be delighted to send you a copy of the latest magazine. I've got lots of your feedback coming up a little bit later on today's show. And don't forget, if you're sticking around for the profile, well, I'll be speaking to Brian McLaren, head of the US election. Again, bit of a running theme this afternoon on Premier Christian Radio. But Brian McLaren, well known as a former pastor, author, progressive Christian. He's going to be talking about his thoughts on Donald Trump and Hillary, as well as about his new book, The Great Spiritual Migration. So listen out for that between 4 and 5 on the profile this afternoon. And don't forget as well, I've mentioned it already, but another reminder that Can We Agree to Disagree? Christians and Humanists in Dialogue. That's the special event I'm part of a panel for on Monday the 14th of November in London at Conway Hall. We'd love to have you there. Come along. Why not bring some friends? It should be a really interesting discussion about the way we as Christians and atheists dialogue and have fruitful kinds of discussions. Speaker panel includes Andrew Copson of the British Humanist Association and his colleague Pavan Dhaliwal. I'll be with Chinny McDonald from the Evangelical Alliance, and it's going to be chaired by Nick Ross. So if you can get along, do check out the event at the eventbrite.co.uk page. Can We Agree to Disagree? Christians and Humanists in Dialogue. Tickets are just £6. Should be a really interesting evening out if you can make it. Don't forget that all of the past shows from Unbelievable are available at the website. Why not join the many people who download the podcast every week? And why not rate us as well on iTunes if you're listening via that platform? We'd love to hear from you, of course, and you can send your emails in about today's programme to unbelievable@premier.org.uk, and you can find us online via the Facebook and Twitter accounts at UnbelievableJB. To follow me on Twitter, facebook.com/UnbelievableJB, if you want to get in touch via Facebook.
You're listening to Unbelievable on Premier Christian Radio.
Okay, wrapping up our discussion today on should Christians vote for Donald Trump. This year's US presidential election, certainly one of the most divisive and in many ways bizarre on record. The white evangelical vote in the USA traditionally sides with the Republican candidate, but this year Donald Trump has divided not only his own party, but evangelical Christians too. We've heard about some of the reasons for that in today's programme, but anyone who doesn't live under a rock will have heard it as well at some point. As I say, today's programme recorded well in advance of the broadcast date of the show. Things may have moved on in ways we cannot possibly imagine. Who knows? But in any case, you're hearing things as they stood at this point in the cycle. So
Christina Rees has joined me in studio today, an American living here in the UK, very much in the role, in the past at least, of campaigning for equality for women in the church. She certainly had a lot to say on our blog recently about Donald Trump's views and language about women. And she says, no, Christians shouldn't vote for Trump. On the line has been John Smirak, a senior editor at stream.org. and author of The Politically Incorrect Guide to Catholicism. He says, yeah, you may not like Trump, but a dead moose tied to a wagon, was his words, is better than voting for Hillary. This election, I have to say, John, has produced so much negativity. I mean, the last one, you know, between Obama and the other candidate.
Mitt Romney. We all forgot him too.
Yeah, I mean, but even that at the time, you know, there were elements that seemed kind of quite harsh. But this puts that in the shade. No one seems happy as well. I mean, as much as you get people campaigning at the Trump stuff and Hillary, you know, has her supporters, the people I speak to on the ground say no one's really happy about this election. How did we arrive, in your view, John, at the point where, you know, through the democratic process that exists in the USA, we've arrived at two candidates who seem to be really unpopular across the board in many ways?
That's right. They're both profoundly flawed candidates. And I think Donald Trump is the fault of a Republican Party leadership that has been too anti-populist. Trump is too populist. The Republican Party establishment was too elitist for the last 20 or 30 years. They've ignored the massive disruptive impact that large-scale, low-skill, and especially non-Western immigration has had on working-class Americans like my family, who've seen their wages frozen for a lifetime. They've not had a wage increase in one generation. Their wages have stayed flat as workers without high levels of skill have constantly seen new people brought in to compete with them for the same jobs and also receive government welfare benefits. That has been a legitimate issue that has been removed from the table. You're not allowed to talk about it. And in the Republican Party, people who did talk about it were systematically excluded from positions of leadership. So I think it's much the way the Conservative Party in Britain didn't take the EU seriously enough, and so finally you had to have the UKIP come out to push for it. I think the Trump movement, there have been some parallels. The issues that the knobs in the Republican Party didn't want to talk about, well, Trump talked about them. He didn't talk about them very intelligently, but his heart in some ways was in the right place, and he's speaking up for people who've had literally no voice in the political arena. I wish he were a better spokesman, but these issues are legitimate and they're not going away. So even if Donald Trump loses, in 4 years, we're going to have these issues again, because the Republican Party needs to take seriously the legitimate interests of its political base, the way the Democrats ruthlessly pursue the interests of their political base.
For you, if say, you know, Donald Trump does not win, the one silver lining to that cloud will be that at least the Republicans will have to take seriously the reasons he won the primaries and got the nomination, and hopefully think about that when it comes to who they're going to be aiming to bring in next time around.
Well, I hope they do that. I hope they don't double down the way your Labour Party is doubling down. You never know what's going to happen in politics.
Okay. Christina, final thoughts as we close out today's programme. I mean, do you also concur that it's been a pretty nasty election and no one's really happy with the choices? I mean, obviously you're happy with Hillary as far as I can see.
Well, I'm not at the head of her fan club at all by any means, but I think she's a much more credible candidate over Trump. But I think stepping back from just Trump and Clinton and what John was talking about, parallels between the US and the UK, particularly with the Brexit vote and what we see going on with some of the issues that Trump is addressing, I think what we're seeing is people who feel alienated, who feel excluded from decision-making, who have not seen their lives getting better. And in the States, it's almost like the death of the American dream. Life does not feel good, and I can't make things better. And I think what we're seeing is why Donald Trump has got so popular is that he seems to be giving a voice to the voiceless. I do not think he is doing that genuinely, but he's tapping into that very real problem where a lot of people are seeing their lives getting worse and not better, and a sense of hopelessness. And so I think all politicians, whatever party, whatever stripe they are, they need to say, what are we doing? Because we have most people just so disenchanted, so fed up, so, you know, living a hard grind of life. While those at the top of the tree have, there's this obscene and unequal distribution of wealth that, as Christians, I think that is one of the greatest things that we all must pull together on and look at how can we do something about that? Because the rich are getting richer and the poor are getting poorer, and that is most definitely not something that Jesus Christ would want to see happening.
We're going to have to leave it there. Thank you very much both for being on the programme today. Again, if you want to find more information on my guests, John Smirak and Christina Rees, why not check out the Unbelievable page at the Premier website, premierchristianradio.com/unbelievable. You can leave a comment underneath today's show, and I'll give you the ways to get in contact via other means in a moment's time. But for the moment, on today's programme, thank you very much, Christina and John.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Unbelievable with Justin Brierley.
Well, I'm sure there are lots of people wanting to have their say on the back of that programme. You can email in unbelievable@premier.org.uk. And of course, again, you can find us online at the social media sites, Twitter and Facebook, at UnbelievableJB, my Twitter handle. If you want to follow me that way, leave me a comment. Facebook.com/UnbelievableJB to like the Facebook page. And I regularly post updates there of what's happening, articles, things that I think you'll find interesting. And of course, you can find much more as well at the Unbelievable page. Leave a comment underneath today's show. Share the programme on. You can subscribe to the podcast and much more besides. premierchristianradio.com/unbelievable. Got something exciting to tell you about as well, and we know that a variety of people listen to Unbelievable, but if you're the praying kind, then I would covet your prayers, to use some Christianese, for a new project I'm undertaking in the next few weeks. I'm going to be busy writing a book. Yes, my very first book, based really on 10 years of doing Unbelievable. The provisional title is Unbelievable: Why After 10 Years of Talking with Atheists I'm Still a Christian. In a way, it's my case for God and Christian faith. And I hope you'll be interested, if you're a long-time listener of Unbelievable, of buying the book and perhaps letting others know about it. I will, of course, be letting you know all about that in due course. But very much a new venture for me, a very exciting and slightly scary one as well. So I'm going to be doing that over the next few weeks. You'll still be hearing Unbelievable every week, but you won't hear as much in the feedback sections. But God willing, that book will land at some point early next year, and I hope you enjoy reading it if you get hold of it. Let's get to some of your feedback. And yes, we've had an awful lot in terms of recent shows, and I'm still trudging through a lot of stuff going back right into the summer when we had Derren Brown on the show, the famous TV illusionist and mentalist, talking about his former Christian faith and his recent stay show, which was on TV as well recently, Miracle. But before we get to some more of that, let's talk about last week's programme. That was a debate on the nature of hell, especially the way it's termed in Revelation, the book of Revelation. That was Chris Date of Rethinking Hell and Rob Wiesner, who, and Chris holds to what's called an annihilationist or conditional immortality view, the view that hell involves final destruction, whereas Rob was defending the eternal conscious torment view. Ian, who is possibly the youngest listener ever to get in touch with the show, has emailed in. He says, I'm 12 years old and have been listening to the show for a while now. I wanted to talk about this show in particular because me and my dad did a study on Revelation. Personally, I think that hell is simply separation from God. Needless to say, though, separation from God is eternal torment, and without God, there's no limit to a person's sin. Just putting that out there, thanks for always doing a great job hosting the show. Ian, thank you very much. I think you're emailing in from the States, and great to know that the show is reaching people of all ages. So lovely to hear from you. Phil wanted to say just this very short email. How do Chris and Rob deal with verses such as Revelation chapter 5, verse 13? And what about the nations and the kings of the earth, who are always depicted as being the enemies, and yet enter through the gates into the city from the lake of fire, which is situated just outside the gates of the city? Now, I don't know what you're talking about there is what some people see as a reference to some kind of universalism, Phil, but thank you for your question. And Paul says, very good show today. I thought both Chris and Rob did a great job. I just wanted to underscore a point Rob made. Conditional immortality advocates are very quick to see the similarities between things that are different, rather than seeing the differences between things that are similar. The Old Testament language in Genesis 19 and Isaiah 34 is similar to Revelation 14, but it's different, the main difference being that Revelation 14 speaks about the lost being tormented without release, forever and ever, and without relief, day and night. Such torment language is missing from the Old Testament passages, and that's significant. And as Rob said, the book of Revelation shows us that torment doesn't mean killing. A text that didn't get mentioned was Revelation 21, verse 8. The first eight verses of Revelation 21 brings us to the eternal state, and when one might think the lost have been annihilated at this stage, we find that their portion will be in the lake that burns with fire and sulfur. Thanks again for your show. And you've said, Paul, actually, you commented on Chris's very first debate on the show. That led to a correspondence between you, and that led to me writing a book on the subject, which I'd like to send to you. Yes, thank you, Paul. I look forward to receiving the book. Glad to receive it and see what came of that interaction that whole thing started. Thank you very much as well to all those who've been getting in touch as well about Derren Brown. This is going back a while now, but We had two episodes of the show, my extended interview with the famed illusionist and mentalist Derren Brown. Just really enjoyed getting to sit down and talk with him. His influence, of course, is huge here in the UK. And we've had lots of sort of stuff going on since that in terms of people sending in their thoughts about that programme. I've had a couple of emails in from Bjorn, who I think is out in the Netherlands, probably. From Finland. Bjorn Abrahamsson. And he sent me two emails. The first one was in response to the Derren Brown show, and a couple of others. Says, it's a shame I've only recently come about your fantastic show. You've helped me a bit in trying to resolve my issues with people who believe. I have never met a Christian in my life, in terms of actually one who believes in the resurrection. So I might be slightly biased in this email. I could go several ways. I could tell you why I'm so interested in this, even though I live in an atheistic milieu. I could comment on so many programs you've done, but since I assume you like shorter emails, I'll put this into three short points. It's always annoyed me that apologists try to make multiverse theory as a way to escape God. It's merely a prediction of quantum mechanics, which was done with no consideration of God. It has risen in popularity, not because anyone cares about God, but because of its predictions and scientific rigor. I appreciate you brought this up because no one can anymore claim it's a fringe theory, which has been the apologist tactics so far. So that's Bjorn responding to our multiverse shows. And secondly, I found it so endearing that you had to bring three friends on to soothe all the charismatics out there that there's still a place for miracles, even though Derren Brown demolished that possibility. All of us who understand neurology, the law of large numbers and psychology know what charismatics are claiming is false. Cases where people claim their doctors are baffled over miracle healings have been shown an unexpected result of treatment, and they're not baffled at all. People interpret the word surprising speed as the doctors saying it's a miracle. Thirdly, you've been debating a lot about the word faith in many episodes. I speak six languages, and only two of them have the word faith. For example, put the word faith into Google Translate between English and Swedish, and then change the word to belief. You'll get the same word. We only use the word belief. Faith doesn't exist. So when Christians say you need faith to believe, that translates you need belief to believe. Well, duh. Now, if you want to say you can change the word with trust, etc., that becomes nonsensical in other tongues I speak. I think faith is just a word made up to accommodate religious language, says Bjorn. Interesting, Bjorn, I'll come to your second email in a moment's time, the issue of faith. Well, perhaps there are no quite equivalents in Danish and so on for the word faith and trust and so on. But I don't know. Of course, what we're referring to is how faith was used as a word in the Bible, pistis. Perhaps the limitations of the language you speak don't account for the nuances that are nevertheless there in the original language and certainly in the English language. So I don't think it's quite fair to say, well, because it doesn't translate in such and such a way in my language means that there's no issue at stake. And obviously, yes, Derren Brown, that was, of course, the whole question, really, wasn't it? Has he demolished miracle claims? And we heard an email, which was turned into a blog, read out last week, of a Christian doctor who claimed to show that he has what he thinks are objective sort of standards of evidence for miracle claims. And when you heard me read that out, you wanted to come back again. So here's your second email. You respond to that
to that particular email I read out last week, saying anecdotes are by definition the opposite of objective evidence. Second, if what he said of the heart condition was that extraordinary, it would have made a big fuss and I probably would have heard of it. Thirdly, attributing a yet-to-be-explained phenomena to God or miracles is an argument from ignorance. In the first case, I understood praying wasn't even involved. Fourth, he was certain without a biopsy. Isn't it obvious it was a misdiagnosis? Fifth, if Jesus' resurrection was proven to have happened and to have been a rare but natural event, then we could explain. I would accept it, but of course it would also make him not God. He's misapplying, since this event was supposed to be supernatural. And if I remember rightly, he was talking about thresholds. Those were fairly reasonable. Then ended up with the design argument, but from physiology, which is silly, but I guess not a fallacy. But to claim that after seeing all this and then not being able to change a mind after seeing a limb grows on God's command is just an assertion he can't back up, and I would argue is false. I'm sure there was much more, but this will have to do. Yes, and you also told me, Bjorn, in these emails that you're something of an evangelist for atheism, and that you think you've talked a few Christians out of their belief, though in your first email you said you never met one who actually really believed in the resurrection. So I anticipate the people perhaps you've been talking to were more perhaps cultural Christians in that sense. But anyway, it's been lovely to have you get in touch. I'm glad you're listening to the show for whatever reason. It's always interesting to me when people of no faith whatsoever and apparently quite strongly anti-Christian nevertheless enjoy and get a lot out of listening to Unbelievable. In fact, I've got some interesting emails of people who are atheists who have been listening to the show for some time and their thoughts on religion. We'll see if we can get to some of that in due course, perhaps on next week's programme. But staying with Derren Brown and some of your feedback on that, here's one from Lance Baker who said, quick or not so quick thoughts in regards to the interview. The obvious abuses set aside, what if part of praying for healing actually is purely psychological rather than physical? And Jesus knew it as such. By commanding us to go out and pray for the sick, he knew that feelings of healing could result, even if they were purely in the head, though not necessarily limited to that. It's not manipulative, because if the person feels better, even if it's just in their mind, not in any physical change in the body, then they're still healed, in a certain sense of the word. Of course, this doesn't work if it's just a temporary adrenaline surge and the pain returns a day later. But perhaps there are cases where the physical pain is actually rooted in the mind, habits of thought, or patterns of negative thinking. We know that the mind can have a tremendous effect on the body, and many studies have demonstrated that, i.e. the tremendous power of the placebo effect. So maybe part of Jesus' command to pray for the sick is less to do with actual physical healing and more to do with healing of the mind, that then impacts the body. In Jesus' cultural context, he couldn't explain all this on the level of psychology, neuroscience, etc., so he simplified it in the best way he could. He doesn't really clarify how the healing happens, if it is the power of God or the power of the mind being overcoming the body. He just tells us to pray for others, to anoint their heads with oil and so on. If my back feels better because a prayer elicited a mind over matter type of response in my physical body, then fantastic. Of course, I don't think it's limited to that, but it feels like a sort of false dichotomy to say, well, because it was in the mind, it must mean God doesn't exist, or at least doesn't heal. Or a more forward suggestion, maybe God doesn't heal, we heal, and Jesus helped us to see that by encouraging us to practice this. The actual mechanism of how or why a thing is better doesn't change the fact that it is what Jesus encouraged us to do for one another. He never really says pray for people and it will release the healing power of the Spirit of God to physically change the biology of the body. He mostly just encourages us to go pray for people and doesn't say much else about what actually happens when we pray for healing. Maybe the admonition to pray was partly to elicit psychological responses, not to enact the miraculous power of God, though I still believe the power of God is a very real thing. And it still testifies to the kingdom being at hand, because the kingdom is about a different way of being in the world. Imagine if atheists and believers alike went around taking seriously the task of praying for healing, and it really happened, even if it was all in people's minds. Imagine people seriously taking the time to place their hands on one another, listen to one another, share about their pain, and genuinely pray for them. Wouldn't that be a more kingdom-like world? It would definitely be a different way of being in the world. You add at the end here, Lance, I should add, I'm a committed Christian, or so I think. I'm convinced that Christians should be a public verdict rather than self-proclamation. So I ask these questions and explore these intricacies because I want to know in a deeper and truer sense what's going on, not because I'm just trying to throw rocks at something I disagree with. Thank you very much, and I appreciate your ruminations on that, Lance. I think I think we do need to take seriously as Christians the way that mind and body interact and psychology and so on, and to see that yeah, we shouldn't compartmentalize or create a false dichotomy. God can use psychological means just as much as he can use supernatural means to achieve his purposes. But great to hear from you. This one quickly as well, from Tim Potter in Memphis, Tennessee, says, listening to programs recently on human miracles, I was reminded of the astonishing fact that apparently even in the age of the internet, the people of God leave such a sparse trail of crumbs for non-believers to follow, that they don't know that we see the hand of God all over the place, all the time, doing real stuff in real time. We tell each other verbally all the time in our homes and in church, and occasionally we tell non-believers, but we don't have a hub from which to tell the world. No orderly accounts of the contemporary situation exist. Much of what Jesus does in our lives is less dramatic than the classic miracles, like the parting of the Red Sea, and most of the remarkable stuff that we're impressed by in our relationship with God is meaningful to us in the context of our relationship with him. And some of it is truly super dramatic and relatively documentable. But the relational stuff is just the kind of thing the world needs to know about. They don't need proof of God. They need a relationship. And that is what our testimony is for. I dare say that's even what the parting of the Red Sea was ultimately for. I've often thought or prayed about starting a Facebook group devoted to the remarkable stories we all have, the word of our testimony. I keep stalling since I have no tech know-how and minimal reach on Facebook. But when you got to Graham's words, particularly if it was cumulative, this was Graham who was responding to that program, I felt God had spoken through that skeptic's mouth, and it would be worth at least a shot to bounce an idea off you. And you go on to give a suggestion for a sort of a web page on these kinds of testimonies. But yes, I think we do need to get stories out there if there are stories to be told. Thank you for the suggestion, Tim. And thanks for all those who have been in touch by email. Appreciate you taking the time to sit down at a keyboard and write out your thoughts about recent shows to me. And I also encourage all of your shorter tweets and Facebook posts as well. You can find more and, of course, all the ways to get in touch at the Unbelievable webpage, premierchristianradio.com/unbelievable. Don't forget about that event coming up on the 14th of November as well. We'd love to see you there if you're within reach of London for that dialogue on how we do dialogue better. Details again from the webpage today. In the meantime, thanks for being with me on today's programme. Let me tell you what's coming up at the same time next week.
You're unbelievable.
Got a real treat for you on next week's programme. Tim Keller joins me. He is, of course, a pastor to the skeptics, and he's the author of a new book, Making Sense of God. In many ways, it's the prequel to his best-selling book, The Reason for God, and it's really making the case for why we should believe in the supernatural at all. And he's going to be in conversation with Jeremy Riddell, the dialogue officer for the British Humanist Association. So here, Tim Keller talking to a skeptic on next week's show. You won't want to miss that, will you? No, you'll be back here for Unbelievable, I'm sure, at the same time next week. In the meantime, have a great week.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed's sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.